theorists, so I'm just curious whether I will have time to discuss the most interesting part of my talk. So, but anyway, I cannot assume that everyone is familiar with the basics. All right. So what to start with is some kind of warming up. Well, it will be a mathematical talk, first of all, so maybe physicists will be disappointed. Now, suppose we have a finite dimensional Keller manifold endowed with a holomorphic function, like it can be algebraic, for example, and the function is regular. So these are the notation for the set of critical points, finitely many of them, like k, and the corresponding set of critical values. And I will assume that all critical values are different. Now, we can consider the Morse complex for the C infinity function, which is a real part of this F. Just try to do the Morse theory. And we immediately discover that the Morse differential is trivial. There is no interaction between critical points because they have the same index equal to the dimension of my manifold. So then in the holomorphic setting, the Morse theory trivializes. And so one can ask the question, what is the holomorphic analog of the Morse theory, how to see Morse differential. For that, we need to consider one parameter families. So for example, we can rescale our holomorphic function by a non-zero complex number, suggestively denoted by h bar. And so then we'll see that for some values of the argument of this h bar, namely, for these values, Morse differential becomes non-trivial. So which means, non-triviality means that we have gradient lines which join critical points. Otherwise, there are no gradient lines at all. So equivalently, we can spell out the same phenomenon in terms of the Floyer theory. Like we consider a zero section of the Cotangin bundle and another holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold, which is a graph of my function. So again, in Floyer theory, we should count the virtual number of pseudo holomorphic disks with the boundaries on these two things, like bygones in some auxiliary almost complex structure. And again, generically, there are no such disks. The Floyer differential is trivial. But if we rescale F, or equivalently, we can rescale the holomorphic form on the Cotangin bundle divided by h bar. So for some values of h bar, exactly for the same values, these pseudo holomorphic disks will appear. All right. So now the point is that in the holomorphic setting, instead of doing Morse theory or Floyer theory just by itself, we should study wall crossing structures. That's a notion which we introduce with Maxim. Actually, we introduced it several times, or rather revisited several times. First time we actually introduced wall crossing formulas in 2008, and 5 years later, in 2013, in this paper, we found a structure, quite elementary, but useful, which we call wall crossing structure, which underlies our wall crossing formulas. And more recently, namely 3 years ago, we revisited this notion of wall crossing structure and introduced a subclass which we called analytic wall crossing structures. And this actually will be my main interest for today. And the reason why analytic wall crossing structures, whatever they are, why they are important, that they give rise to resurgent series. We formulated a general conjecture, which I will discuss in a particular example today, which said that analytic wall crossing structure produces a formal series which is resurgent. It means Borel resummable. All right. Good. Now, well, if we kind of hypothetically imagine that I will have enough time today, so then I will explain the application of the wall crossing structures to the Chern-Simons theory. I say here complexified mean that the compact group, for example, SU2, I replaced by complexification, but in fact, we have a conjecture how this complexified story is related to the actual partition function for the unitary group. All right. Now, geometrically, the wall crossing structure and its application is related to the pair of holomorphic or complex Lagrangian subvarieties. In general, they don't have to be smooth. An example is given, was given on this previous, whatever, here, like L0 and L1, zero section, and the graph of the differential. But in general, they can be arbitrary. For example, we can do the path integral with, or the path is with boundary conditions on two holomorphic Lagrangians. And it's also a special case of our theory. Or proposal, if you'd like, because part of it is conjectural. All right, so in any case, we'll be dealing with complex symplectic manifolds and Lagrangian submanifolds or subvarieties in them, which in this talk they will be holomorphic Lagrangian. And all that is a part of our general project, or I would say even program, which we called holomorphic Fleur theory, which roughly studies questions of Fleur theoretical nature in the framework of complex symplectic manifolds. All right. Since, again, I'm not sure that I will have time to discuss this Chern-Simons story in detail, but a rough idea is the following. So the critical point of the Chern-Simons functional, which is multivalued functional, or we can work with a corresponding holomorphic one form, so it will be zeros of one form, like critical points, they are flat connections, and they correspond to two complex Lagrangian subvarieties, which kind of easy, they can be easily seen if your 3D manifold is obtained as a result of a surgery along, say, a knot. So then for each critical point, which is intersection of these two holomorphic Lagrangian subvarieties, we have a perturbative expansion of the Chern-Simons, which does not depend on the global integration cycle. It's pure formal thing. Yeah, and so then the interaction of this critical point is obtained by counting the number of gradient lines for the rotated Chern-Simons functional. It's exactly the same story which I mentioned a few minutes ago. For certain thetas, these gradient lines will appear, but in order to count them, one should, in the simplest case of rigid connections, one should solve some quite complicated nonlinear differential equation with a boundary condition. It's Kapustin-Witten equation with a boundary condition given by these flat connections. And so then we will have a bunch of, I would say, classical data. They are not quantum. It's just critical points and a number of solutions to certain differential equations. And so the point is that from this classical data, we can construct a wall crossing structure which knows everything about quantum theory. So that's a very rough idea. And I mentioned here that it's reminiscent to the algebra of the infrared story by Gayota, Moore, and Witten. And actually, this is, again, morally can be thought of as expansion of the idea of Witten about analytic continuation of Chern-Simons. But we will not require that critical points are Morse, Morse bot, or whatever. It will be quite general. All right. This is one, I would say, remark, which is rather about holomorphic Floer theory in general. In the end, we will have some Chern-Simons wall crossing structure, and it can be described in different ways. One will be, which I plan to discuss, is very much similar to the finite dimensional story. And intuitively, it's kind of obvious, but it will have some subtleties related to infinite dimensionality of the objects. And the second one is pure finite dimensional and given in terms of quantization of these finite dimensional holomorphic Lagrangian subvarieties and in terms of the corresponding quantum wave functions. So these two different approaches, one which I will discuss and the other which I will not, they correspond to, roughly speaking, A and B side of holomorphic Floer theory, but it's not A and B side in any, I would say, physical sense, not like in the mirror symmetry. A side, roughly speaking, correspond to these Floer theoretical things, like counting gradient lines or pseudo-holomorphic disks with boundaries on Lagrangians, something Floer theoretical type question. And the B side is something about holonomic modules or the deformation quantization of the same complex symplectic manifold. And so the relation between A and B sides in general, it's a sort of a Riemann-Hilbert correspondence. We have general conjectural Riemann-Hilbert correspondence about which I spoke here in perimeter several times, last time just immediately before it was closed for COVID, maybe as a result of my talk. But again, today I will be rather speaking about the A side, although B is interesting by itself. Good. All right, now the wall crossing structures, whatever they are, they always have the corresponding wall crossing formulas. And as for today, it's Picard-Lefschetz wall crossing formulas, or physicists call them Chakotay-Wafa. From the geometric perspective, these formulas are corollaries of the geometric fact, which is an isomorphism between global and local Bethe cohomology. And so I will recall that story. It's very, very much well known, but kind of maybe it's better to gather all these basic facts just to have some very simple intuition. So it's something about Landau-Ginzburg model, which mathematically means Foucault-Seidel category. So again, we have like the same X and F. Let's X to be Keller and F. Let's assume just that, okay, let's assume that it's Keller, non-compact, of course, and F is a holomorphic function. And so then there is a Foucault-Seidel category of this manifold with this function. And this local to global isomorphism of Betticca homology categorically, so if you categorify it, it corresponds to the equivalence of local and global descriptions of this Foucault-Seidel category. And so I will recall it in the simplest case when F is Morse. For that, I need the notion of a thimble. So here it's a formal definition, but picture is better. So this is a global thimble. Xi is a critical point of F. We choose a direction, we choose an angle theta, theta plus pi, if you want to shoot it some negative direction. And so then we consider all gradient lines for the rotated function F, rotated by the angle theta plus pi, gradient lines for the real part of it. And so the union of all these gradient lines, it's a Lagrangian subvariety, looks like this, which is projected by my holomorphic function to array, outcoming from the corresponding critical value. And so this is thimble in the direction theta plus pi. Actually, on this picture, we have something which I will need later. It's a Stokes ray. And the Stokes ray is a ray which emanates from the origin and contains at least two critical values. Generically, it contains exactly two critical values, so we can order them by proximity to the origin. And so if I have another critical value and some critical point, so there is a corresponding thimble, which I did not depict it here, which is projected by the same ray. So then we have a bunch of parallel rays and bunch of thimbles outcoming from its own critical points. So these global thimbles generate the global Foucault-Seidel category. So that's a global description. Kind of the difficult part is to describe this A infinity structure, but let me just not to speak about it and just speak about generators. So these generate the global Foucault-Seidel categories. Does it have to be present? This, wait, I can somehow, probably I cannot. But anyway, no. All right, so anyway, so that's the same, it's kind of magnified or anti-magnified, the same story where I shoot the thimble from the critical point. Thank you, great. I should, no, but can you put it on me kind of, as, okay, yeah, so it's an interesting, just, okay, good, good, don't do anything, okay, great. Okay, so this is a local thimble, it's the same thing, I take a fixed critical value and the corresponding critical fiber, so that's a critical point, and I take the tubular neighborhood of the critical fiber. And they do exactly the same thing. I shoot a thimble, but I stop at the boundary of this cylinder. So I call it local thimble. And so then I can define the category. In this case, it's just local category with one generator. All right. So it's kind of very easy thing. So then for each critical value, I have the corresponding local Foucault's ideal category, and the question is how do they interact? And so this whatever algebra of the infrared story describes how to describe the global Foucault's ideal category in terms of interactions of the local one. Today I am not interested in the categorification. I would rather speak about decategorification, because I would like to explain how looks this description at the level of cohomology. So first, let's look for homology classes. It's a bit easier because we have varieties, so they certainly have some homology classes in the relative homology of my space with respect to the preimage of the point Z, which is very, very far. It's large absolute value, but the argument is fixed. So we fix a direction, take a point on that ray, and take the relative homology, probably modulo torsion. So it will be a free abelian group, which depends on the angle. So we can change its angle, so we have a local system of lattices on the circle, or we can consider the corresponding complex numbers with argument theta, so then we'll have local system on the C star. It's just a matter of choice. All right. Now, similarly, okay, so then these are this global Betti homology, or we can take dual global Betti cohomology. And we can define using the same picture, but local pictures, we can define local Betti cohomology, and this is just a notation. So we have a direct sum of this local thing, and let me call local Betti cohomology this direct sum. All right. So then there is an isomorphism of local and global Betti cohomology. So that's actually the fact, and this isomorphism is better to be described in terms of the corresponding local systems. And now comes a subtle picture, issue. When theta is generic, when it's not a Stokes ray, then they're just literally isomorphic. But when we cross the Stokes ray, then we have an isomorphism of the local Betti cohomology before, when I take minus here, and after, when I have plus. So imagine the ray and two rays below and above this ray. And so then there is an isomorphism. And so in order to encode all this story, we need to, in terms of local Betti cohomology, which are much simpler, we should remember this Stokes isomorphism. All right. So, but again, so these Stokes isomorphisms, they are geometrically the same as isomorphism of local and global Betti cohomology when we cross this. So that's a very simple thing. And one thing will be essential in infinite dimensions. It's an alternative way to write down local Betti cohomology. When my function is algebraic, like for example, if X is affine algebraic with say Keller structure and F is a regular function, then instead of relative homology or cohomology, it's better to consider cohomology with coefficients in the sheaf of vanishing cycles. So when we go to infinite dimension, these Fleur theoretical considerations become complicated when we want to define rigorously what is a thimble in infinite dimension, or even worse, when the point is not Morse, what the corresponding description of the analog of the periodic cyclic homology of the Fukuya-Zeidel category, but this a sheaf of vanishing cycles, it's kind of a more algebraic thing which sometimes it's possible to describe in terms of in finite dimensional terms. All right. So anyway, we have an isomorphism of local and global Bethe cohomology, and this isomorphism can be encoded in different data which appears in different parts of mathematics. So there will be three on this slide and three on the other one. This I will use later, and the other I will not, but anyway, they all equivalent. There are six equivalent description of this Bethe data. So description A, it's more or less what I said before. It's local system of abelian groups on a circle, and for each Stokes ray, a morphism of fibers of local systems. Yeah, you can imagine. So this is the geometry. So that's a critical value. This is one circle. It's another circle. And so you take the thing, and this gives you theta j, and on each of these you have this a local system of local relative cohomology. So that's more or less what I described before. Now, the data A are equivalent to constructible sheaf with a set of singularities Zi and with the condition that R gamma, there are no higher cohomologies. So such sheaves, I think first they were considered by Nick Katz, and I think he denoted by perv zero because it's a quotient of the category of perverse sheaves by local systems. So this is something which I will be especially interested in infinite dimensional case. And C is just equivalent description because perverse sheaf doesn't have to be given just by a single sheaf. But it turns out that in this case, you can either speak about perverse sheaves, which means complexes, like on the line, it's just two-term complexes, or just single constructible sheaf. Okay, and this this is equivalent to... So then in a sense, when you want, for example, categorify the algebra of the infrared, which we did with Kapranov and Sukhanov, we categorify this perverse sheaf, right? Good. And three more just for your information, but it might have some interesting corollaries. So the same data are equivalent to the Bethe data for the non-commutative Hodge structure in the sense of Kotsarkov, Kontsevich, and Pantev, or constructible sheaves on the line with a coordinate h bar with a singular support which belongs to the union of you can say punctured disks or kind of a sieve with small disk about critical points removed. It's sort of a part of the zero section, and the conormal bundles of certain closed real analytic curves about Zi. For Morse singularities, it's not very interesting. These analytic curves are just small circles. And these conormal bundles are just cylinders. But when we consider more complicated superpotential, then it will be more complicated, interesting story, which is related to Guillain-Malgrange, Riemann-Hilbert correspondence in one dimension. And yet another purely topological description, which in some sense operatic or whatever, factorization, algebra, I don't know. Anyway, purely topological description of the same data. You have a collection of vector spaces parameterized by a disk B capital and the point B small on the boundary, such that the boundary does not contain any of the critical values and subject to just one axiom, that if we have this picture, if B contains inside B prime and B2 prime, so that this bouquet is a retraction of B, and you see the point B small is common for all three, then this condition, direct sum condition, is satisfied. All right, so this is all about Betti data. And again, this is an illustrating picture. And now I come to the story which I would like in the end to generalize to infinite dimensions. But let me recall how does it look in finite dimensions, which means basically how wall crossing formulas, the same Chakotay-Wafa or Picard-Lefschetz, how do they look for exponential integrals? It's kind of too many lines on this slide. My son always tells me that you have too many lines on the same slide. All right. So what is this? So we have the same let scalar manifold X. And I would like to speak about exponential integrals over some cycles. Since the thimbles for the Morse F generate the relative homology, so every cycle is a linear combination of this, integer linear combination. So it's enough to consider these integrals. But for that, we need to choose a top degree form, holomorphic volume form. Doesn't have to be Calabi-Yau, just kind of top degree holomorphic form. All right. So then I will have a k, k number of critical points or critical values, have k exponential integrals. And let's assume that critical values are in generic positions, so each Stokes ray contains exactly two different critical values. So if Zi is closer to the origin, I will write it like this. So, okay, so we have a collection of integrals, and so kind of Picard-Lefschetz formula gives a very simple wall crossing formula for these integrals. So when I cross the Stokes ray, then the integral EI changes in this way. So I will add with the integral over another symbol. Yeah, when these two Zi and Zj kind of land on the same Stokes ray, and Nij is a number of gradient trajectories of this rotated the real part of the rotated holomorphic function. So as I mentioned before, for Stokes direction, such gradient lines appears, and so I can count them. It's the same as the number of pseudo-holomorphic disks between the corresponding Lagrangian zero section and the graph of the differential. Okay. Now, let's modify this exponential integral by this factor, which will be especially useful in infinite dimensions when n will be equal to infinity. And so then the stationary phase gives me the formal series for this modified integral. the jump of them, the wall crossing formula for this modified thing is more or less the same as for non-modified, so the same Nij appears in a slightly different disguise. And notice that this factor is exponentially small if I choose the right direction. If I approach the origin along the ray where this thing decays exponentially, then basically they have the same formal series expansion of the origin. But they are formal. All right. In order to do something analytic, again, it's a reminder, it's some kind of basic things and basic exercise in complex analysis, one variable. So I will consider the vector of these modified exponential integrals. They are so far formal series, but when I incorporate Stokes automorphisms, when I cross Stokes rays, then the modified collection of formal bundles, so you see, they have something like this. So these are my Stokes rays. Here I have something formal. They do not talk to each other. But here I have a formal change of variables, if you'd like, of these vectors. So when I modified my trivial bundle, then I get the holomorphic bundle. And kind of an easy observation is that this holomorphic vector bundle, and actually together with a section, it contains all the information about any exponential integral over any cycle. So which means that instead of looking for this, we can speak geometrically about this holomorphic bundle with a holomorphic section. And the toy model of our conjecture, let's see, but let me say it here, the toy model of our resurgent conjecture says that if we constructed this holomorphic bundle somehow from whatever we call wall crossing, analytic wall crossing data, and if you take any holomorphic section of this holomorphic bundle, then its formal expansion at the origin is a resurgent series. In this case, of course, it can be checked directly because it's very, very easy. But all right, this is something about relation to holomorphic Floyer theory, that exactly the same holomorphic bundle with a section can be derived from Floyer theoretical data, this complex. Actually, we can look at it as a C infinity. So if you would like to speak about Foucault categories, it's better to take a real part of the holomorphic form and the imaginary treat as a B field. So then we have, anyway, so I really don't need this Floyer theoretical interpretation, but just to keep in mind that the isomorphism. So anyway, so it's, I can comment on this, but I do not want to spend too much time. It's something which I'm not going to use because it's related in Chern-Simon story to an alternative way to describe these perturbative expansions as a pairing of two quantum wave functions. All right. Now, I did not tell you what's a wall crossing structure in general, but let me, in this particular case of exponential integrals, explain what kind of data in general define the wall crossing structure. So it's sort of axiomatic way to speak about the same things which I described before. So, first of all, we need a local system of charged lattices. So this is gamma H. I prefer to think as a local system on C star, but it can be local system on a circle, if you like. Local system of central charges. Homomorphism, fiber-wise homomorphism to complex numbers. Good. In this particular case, this is my local system. It's the same relative homology, which I described previously. Central charge is just the values of critical values, well, rescaled if we incorporate this h-bar. Now, local system of graded Lie algebras. This is important and non-trivial story. In general, depending on the problem, we need to find what this local system of graded Lie algebra is. So I am writing it down in this a little bit more complicated way. But again, if you forget about H, what is written here, D epsilon is a small disk about the critical value. And this is a pre-image, so it's a cylinder which tubular neighborhood of the critical fiber, which already appeared previously. On the boundary on this cylinder, I take one point and consider the pre-image of this point. Some line, do I have? Yeah, okay, great. This is a picture. So this is a disk, this is a point, and I take the pre-image of the disk, the cylinder, and take the relative homology with respect to this. All right. This is one vector space. For another critical value, I have a similar one, and I consider home from this to this and take the direct sum over all I and j. All right. In algebra geometric framework, it's better to replace this relative homology by much simpler notation, which is cohomology with coefficient in the sheaf of vanishing cycles. So basically, I consider just endomorphism of this vector space. And so it depends on h-bar. So it is nice outside of Stokes directions. So then the final piece of wall crossing structure in general, it's Stokes automorphisms. I already described them in our story. In the case of exponential integrals, they are encoded in terms of Stokes indices. It's just some matrices with entries which are this number of gradient lines, upper triangular matrices. In general, we have a local system of something which we call with Maxim stability data on graded Lie algebras. And the least trivial part of the stability data is the analog of this Donaldson-Thomas, I would say, invariance. But in this case, it's just number of gradient lines. All right, so this is a formal description of the wall crossing structure, which is more or less, it encodes the same Betti data as I explained before. Good, this is a picture already explained. And now, wow, I do have time to start to talk about generalization. How, I mean, it's conjectural proposal for the Chern-Simons theory. Okay, so this is some basics, which I already mentioned. So we start with a compact-oriented 3D manifold. This is a gauge group of the theory, and G is its complexification. So representing M3 as a surgery along the knot, say along the knot, we get a complex symplectic manifold of flat G connections. Again, it's technically a stack, but we can consider framed connections, picking a point at M3 and fixing a trivialization of my bundle at this point, my G bundle at this point. So then we have infinite dimensional manifold. And in any case, we have two complex Lagrangian subvarieties in this symplectic, let's call it manifold. Intersection can be identified with flat G connections, and it's the same as the critical points of the when we complexify, which I do, with a set of critical points of the Chern-Simons functional. It's multivalued functional, but we can go to the abelian universal cover of my manifold. It still be a holomorphic function. This is what I just said, that we can work with a framed connections, C means that they are complexified, or we can work with holomorphic one form, because we, with Maxim, we have a theory of wall-crossing structures for exponential integrals with multivalued phases, which it's quite interesting, because differently from functions which can exist only on non-compact complex manifolds, holomorphic one forms can exist on compact manifolds, and the corresponding wall-crossing structure controls the count of the number of saddle connections on Riemann surfaces, and it solves some classical problem. But anyway, so in this case, it's your choice. You work with one form or with multivalued. So this is something which probably I should skip, but I would like to puzzle you and then move on, because there is another pair of complex Lagrangian manifolds which looks completely ad hoc in this story, but nevertheless, it's related to the same Chern-Simons theory, and these are a pair of K2 Lagrangians in the complex torus. So one is a product of pairs of pens, and the other one is a sort of a coordinate Lagrangian submanifold corresponding to a choice of the integer symmetric matrix. So roughly speaking, you can find such a pair that the intersection points bijectively correspond to flat connections. But it's a kind of, it's a slightly different story, but nevertheless, I would like to say that there are at least two different pairs of complex Lagrangians which are relevant to Chern-Simons. Now, conventionally, we should give a meaning. We should fix a level of the theory, like a positive integer, and give a meaning to this integral over the space of unitary framed connection. C means that here I indeed consider GC bundles with GC connections. All right, and so when we kind of would like to be even more mathematical, we would like to have a quantum 3D quantum field theory, topological quantum field theory, such that this will be the partition function, something which we associate to the closed 3D manifold by integrating over this infinite dimensional cycle. So as far as I know, there is no mathematically rigorous description of this theory, except of the description by completely different means, namely in terms of representations of quantum groups at roots of one. So it's still state of art as in 90s. So now the idea is that first we forget about integer level, we treat this integral as exponential integral, and we complexify this integration cycle, so it will be sort of a generalization to infinite dimensional case with what I said before. So I would like just to mimic what I did before, but then there will be a conjecture how this unitary integral can be recovered, how this Rishitikhin-Turayev invariance can be recovered roughly from integrals over symbols. And there will be some conjecture about analyticity. All right, now in order to explain the approach, if kind of you would like to be at least at the mathematical physics level of rigor, we should make some assumptions. In particular, to assume that Chern-Simons functional defines a locally trivial fiber bundle as a function. So then it's indeed the situation is similar to what we had in finite dimensions. Now, secondly, we would like to assume that there is a well-defined sheaf of vanishing cycles corresponding to Chern-Simons functional. At first, it looks kind of scary, but if you think a little bit, it's not that scary, at least for rigid connections. You can imagine that you factorize your manifold as a product of a finite dimensional piece and transversal one. And so in transversal direction, it's sum of quadratic forms and infinitely many variables. So then basically, this reduces to the definition of the sheaf of vanishing cycles in finite dimensional case. Up to a choice of something which is known as orientation data, it's some mathematical subtlety. So I'm not sure, maybe people have already defined this sheaf of vanishing cycles, but I didn't see it exactly in this framework. Like Joyce and his collaborator, they tried to define it for the holomorphic Chern-Simons on the different stack, but probably the same technique works here, so I don't know. I will assume that this is done. And also I will assume as a black box the existence of local perturbative expansions, this RJ. So if alpha is a differential of the complexified Chern-Simons, holomorphic one form, so the zero locus is a union of finitely many connected components, and in the neighborhood of each connected component, yeah, so this is some connected component of the set of zeros, yeah, I can consider like morally neighborhood, and here I have this Chern-Simons functional, which is well defined in this neighborhood because it's very small. And so I can consider this sheaf of vanishing cycles. So in general, and so perturbative expansion in Chern-Simons is this map. Of course, if my point, my connected component is just a singular rigid connection with a trivial differential. It's just RJ is given by Feynman rules, direct sum of trivalent graphs, but in general it's not. So morally you should think in terms of these local exponential integrals. Again, if you'd like to have some mental picture, then RJ is formal expansions of the ill-defined local Feynman integrals. But it should come, this expansion should come from some other means. So I take it as black box.
So why do you have the outer bay closure there? You don't, you
know. Because I have fractional powers of H. I have the action of the group Z. Yeah, you see, I have this homomorphism, which of course it exists in finite dimensions as well. So it has fractional powers here. So, because there is a monodromy, the local system has a monodromy. So then In general, it's indeed it's a piezo series, even if you, yeah, okay. In terms of differential equations, this means that you should lift your irregular connection in H bar to the finite cover of the disk. So anyway, so taking this RJ as a black box, we would like to approach this wall crossing structure. And the approach, one of the possible approaches is to explain this perverse shift, which encoded the Betti data in finite dimensional case. We had a perverse shift with this property. And so then the question is, what's the analog of this perverse shift in infinite dimensions? And it is related to a new structure, which we called, in fact, it's a variation of Hodge structure of infinite rank. But the problem is that my time is up. So then probably I should rather stop here. Let's see.
You started a couple minutes late.
All right, good, good. All right, so if you give me maybe 5 more minutes, I maybe will tell you something about this F. It is defined very much in the similar way as in finite dimensions, but we need a different model because Chern-Simons as a function, it's multivalued. So the finite dimensional model is slightly different. So we have n-dimensional complex manifold, the volume form as a function, but function is C star valued, yeah? So if you want to go to a C valued function, we should consider the universal abelian cover for our manifold. And then what we had in the case of C-valued function, like Landau-Ginzburg story, should be replaced by this direct sum. But now comes an interesting thing that we have some infinite dimensional, we have infinite dimensional vector spaces. The typical fiber of the local system, which we had before, it's now becomes an infinite dimensional. So you see, because the monodromy, the deck transformation here, of course, the fiber is Z, so we have countably many. So we modified finite dimensional story in such a way that the fiber has a countable dimension. Okay, for physicists, maybe it's not a big deal. For mathematicians should be a little bit more careful because there is no way to defy perverse shift with infinitely many singularities and with a general monodromy of infinite rank. And this is what we face in Chern-Simons story at first glance. All right. So now we would like to define the local system, and let me just jump here. Sorry for kind of jumping too fast, but this is the answer. So we have a local system over the line minus a set of critical value of Chern-Simons. It's a values of the Billinson-Borel regulator. So it's finitely many arithmetic series on C. And so that's countable set. The fiber I denote like this suggestively. So morally, it's a relative homology of the universal abelian cover of the space of framed connections with respect to the preimage of some point which is very, very far at infinity. That's what we did. Well, but it's just a notation because what we can have in infinite dimensions, we can have the cohomology of the finite dimensional variety, which is a zero locus of the one form with coefficients in the sheaf of vanishing cycles of the rotated Chern-Simons functional. So then zero, I do not want to explain, this zero is chosen to correspond to middle perversity in finite dimension, so it's some grading, so but it's a good one. And so I should take the product, and it's a countable product over all critical values. So in this sense, I get a local system which I would like to think as a co-sheaf. Co-sheaf because it has countable rank, I can dualize. So the sheaf, the dual sheaf has a meaning. If I denote this F Chern-Simons, this dual sheaf, then, which can be naturally extended to the critical points, and the reason for that I explain on the next slide, because a monodromy has only finite dimensional blocks about critical values, then one can prove, and this is a non-trivial computation, that R gamma of this sheaf is equal to zero, which means that it has a very important kind of evidence to be the one which controls everything. Okay, and probably the last thing which I have time to say is the corresponding Hodge structure. So I have a local system of lattices of infinite rank, which I described. So I can tensor it with C and speculate that it carries a Hodge filtration of infinite rank, and the fibers of the local system itself carry a weight filtration. Well, I can say more about that, but I don't have time. There is some evidence that this weight filtration is non-trivial. Okay, so let's just assume that we convince ourselves that it's non-trivial. Now, this sheaf can be thought as a perverse sheaf, and the reason is that at least when my critical points are rigid flat connections, one can compute the monodromy and to see that basically the monodromy has ones on the diagonal except of a single finite dimensional block. So it's finite dimensional. And so then everything behaves as in finite dimension. All right, and the final thing is that by analogy with finite dimensional case, one can hope that this perverse sheaf of infinite rank encodes wall crossing structure. Recall that in finite dimension, this perverse sheaf was equivalent to the collection of local Betti data and interactions between them. So it's the same story. And well, we conjectured with some computational evidence that the wall crossing structure is analytic, and therefore it should imply a resurgence of local perturbative series in the complexified Chern-Simons theory. So I have a few more slides which explain how all that is related to the integral over the cycle of unitary connections, but I should better stop. I can send you slides so you can pause them with the video. Okay.
Questions for the speaker?
I can do the slideshows and you can stop me. So this is something about resurgence, which I just said. Rho is a flat connection. This is explanation. This is something about monodromy. This is a relation to the unitary cycle, which intuitively quite clear that the unitary connection define the cycle, which is an integer combination of some complex cycle analog of this old Witten story with combination of thimbles. This is a kind of a concrete realization of this cycle. This is what on the left hand side, this is what we have in the unitary Chern-Simon theory, and this is something which complexified story gives us. These integration cycles are generalization of thimbles. So for those who know well this Witten's paper, it's very much similar conjecture. But now we it's really the conjecture about the full integral of the full cycle. So all critical points should be taken into account, and they are not Morse in general. So this is some kind of computational story. And this is something about relation to Rishitikhin-Turayev invariance. So the conjecture is that these things has nice analytic properties. And so when we analytically continue, we can compute analytic function in these special values where k now is an integer. So conjecturally, we get those invariants. Again, morally, this is what a physicist hoped for, but now it's sort of a more precise thing. And this is another conjecture which I believe physicists didn't have. This generating function is analytic. Generating function over all levels. I'm not sure that you considered, and this is a toy model, finite dimensional toy model for this thing. And there are a few more slides which I even don't remember what they are. Ah, no, it's even more complicated thing. So this is probably the most appealing.
Well, there are no more questions. We should thank the speaker again.